name is Quinton Irie.
And I'm James King.
And this is an exercise in living thoughtful and thoroughly examined lives.
It starts each episode when one of us brings a topic from our lives that the other has not yet heard. And we explore that event or feeling or idea or plan or passion or really any subject from our lives that deserves intentional reflection.
Then it's all you. You can listen, engage, help us with our lives, and if you choose, embark on this journey with us and dare to live thoughtfully in our community of like-minded people.
This week we have this this month. Let us know if you guys want us to be a weekly podcast. This month we have two guests for you. We have a wide range of topics.
A double whammy.
Yeah, double feature.
And this
for
is
you.
All for the record, people, courtesy of James. I deserve no credit with this. This was all your brainchild,
yeah,
man.
Damn right.
You're going to be editing this one too. This is a James King special right here.
I need to go to the chiropractor. My back's been hurting from carrying the show. For so long.
I was wondering where that was going. I was like, all right.
Yeah, you like that?
That's cool.
A little roundabout joke there.
Speaking anyway, of you carrying the show, how's it been being our social media manager?
It's been great, man. Go follow us on, we haven't put anything out there yet, but we decided to have a joint TikTok, much to my chagrin. So if you want to go.
We're collectively 13 years old.
Correct. It's the way of the future, so we got to stay relevant.
Separately, we're grown men. Together,
exactly.
13.
Right. Correct. That's our combined age. The thing is, like, there's a lot of like parents of famous TikTok kids that are on there. So I mean, I'm
Dude,
not 50 years
TikTok,
old. I'm not
TikTok gets a lot of hate. I have no shame in saying that I have the app and I enjoy it. And there's tons of good stuff on there. And I really enjoy it. It's like any other part of the internet. You know, like you see all the TikTok cringe compilations, and those are there. But once TikTok gets a feel for what you like, you know, based off what you're liking, what you're enjoying, whatnot, then it becomes a feed that's customized to you. So when I'm on TikTok, I don't see hardly any of that stuff because TikTok knows I'm not interested in that. It's just like any other internet service, and it gets too much hate. I'm a fan.
I mean, there's just as much cringe as can be found anywhere else. I mean, it's not like it's the only place that has stupid videos. So this week we have Roast Austin.
I'm hungry.
Roast Austin. And you know, I told you I talked to you about this on the show, so we haven't talked about it yet. I think this week I'm going to be the bigger man, and I'm going to suspend Roast Austin for this month.
Whoa!
Austin recently got engaged, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
So I didn't feel right about raking him over the coals for being such a bad friend, you know, or making any jokes about how it's such a miracle that he got a girl to actually agree to marry him. Not going to make any of those jokes this week.
No,
it's all
absolutely not.
It's all just above the belt. Just a sincere, all jokes aside, sincere congrats to Austin. And we will resume the roast next month when inevitably I don't get invited to the wedding, in which case we will continue until I hear otherwise. We let you off easy this week, Austin.
I think the only other thing I wanted to mention up top before we get into it was some mandatory viewing. And by mandatory, I mean really recommended, I guess. These are some recommendations that I have. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the world right now. We addressed it a little bit at the very beginning of our last episode. And like I said there, and you know, James, you and I have talked about it off air, but we really aren't a topical podcast. We're very focused on our interior lives. And so I wasn't sure if I wanted to bring this up, but it is relevant to my interior life and kind of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately, as will happen. You know, big things happen in the world. It is relevant to our lives. So I wanted to mention these because they've been really impactful for me. And if you choose to seek them out, I would love to hear what you think about them. Seek us out on social media. Definitely love to have a conversation with you about it. And in all likelihood, if you want to get a leg up on what I'll likely be bringing up as a topic in the near future, this is a good place to start because it's relevant. The first thing I want to start you off with is a music video. James, do you listen to Anderson .Paak at all?
I did. I'm going to be honest. I zoned out for like the last 30 seconds because I heard something outside. but I'm sure it was great. And I just tuned in back now, and you asked me if I've seen a music video by, you say, Andrew Pack?
Anderson Pack. I'm not asking about a music video. I'm just asking, have you listened to him at all?
I don't know. I have never heard of that person.
Okay, so Anderson Pack is fantastic. He's one of the rare drummers and vocalists, which is cool. It's really cool to see him perform.
Respect.
Yeah. So I highly recommend him as an artist in general. But actually yesterday, he dropped a new track that is very, it's very topical, unlike our show. But it deals a lot with the lockdown and the recent killing and the rioting and all that. And I found it to be a really cool artistic expression of how he's feeling and how people in general are feeling. So Anderson .Paak, Lockdown. Watch the music video because it's a beautiful film in addition to being a wonderful song. Definitely recommend checking that out. In addition, the two other things that I want to mention that are more informational, I guess, as opposed to artsy, are, first of all, you do watch Last Week Tonight on occasion, I'm pretty sure, right, James?
Yes. Yeah, I do rarely. Yeah.
Cool. So his latest episode was on police reform. So he was talking about, you know, the defund the police, the abolish the police, and like what that actually means beyond the kind of slogan. And the reason that I'm recommending it isn't really because of that specific part of it. That's interesting, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, he does kind of a deep dive on the history of the police and why people are upset. To put it mildly, and right. He does it in a really good way. It was very emotional for me. He shows a lot of footage that is very painful to watch, so it's not for the faint of heart, but it is very worthwhile. And then the final thing that I'll recommend, and since I've done it for the other two so far, I guess I'll start by asking you, James, if you've even heard of this person. Have you ever listened to any Dave Chappelle stand up?
I love his I don't know if it's stand up, but it's his segment on Comedy Central where he's George Bush. That's my favorite. I don't know. I haven't watched
that first Chappelle show back in the day.
That might have been. Yeah, that's an old video, but I don't think I've ever watched Dave Chappelle watched him do like strictly stand up routines. No.
Again, kind of like with everyone so far, I highly recommend him in general. His stand up, especially his last four specials. He released two groups of specials. So it was, you know, like I think Netflix categorized it almost like a show. So it's like episode one, episode two type of thing. So his last two groups of specials are fantastic. Some of his best work and some of my favorite specials in general. But recently, I think last week, he dropped a video. It's on the Netflix YouTube channel, I think. Let me double check that. Yeah, so it's on the page Netflix is a joke. The video is called 8:46 Dave Chappelle, and it's interesting, first of all, because it's a live event in the time of COVID, one of the very few that's happening, so it's interesting to see kind of how they approach that and how it's working. But more than that, it has comedic elements. You know, it is Dave Chappelle. He cracks some jokes. But more than anything, it's just his honest reflection on the current situation. And I thought it was wildly insightful, very interesting. And Dave Chappelle, one of the reasons I really like him is that regardless of whether or not I agree with him on a given topic, the amount of thought and information that he puts into what he says is really, really worth checking out. So I definitely recommend checking those out. To you, James, I might corner you next episode and ask you what you think of all that. So you need to get on it. And listeners, check it out. Let me know what you think. I would love to have a dialogue with you about that.
Are you getting, there's a lot of sponsorships, man. Are you getting paid on the side? I'm scraping off the top here. We've had sponsorships for months now, and I haven't been told.
Yeah, I just didn't want to cut you in, man.
Yeah, right. Thanks for that.
Cool. I thought about cutting it down, but like legitimately those three especially are just, they're really good. I know it's a lot, but it's worth checking out.
We'll check it out. I've seen ads for I hadn't heard of the other two, but I've seen ads for Netflix is a joke. I've definitely seen that around.
Yeah. And it's free. You don't even have to have Netflix. It's on YouTube.
Nice. I'll check it out for sure.
Dope. Well, we are leading in with Mason, right?
Sounds good. Let's get him on.
Well, there you have it. Another smooth transition from the guys.
I'm recording. All right. Yeah, I wasn't saying anything of note, James. So. I was.
We're gonna wait for the toilet to be done because you know James couldn't restrain himself.
I just drank an entire.
Is the toilet flushing in the background? Because I can't hear it.
It's still running.
Yeah, you won't be able to hear it, but my microphone will be able to hear.
And I'm drinking more water.
No, give me the water. I told you not to drink. You idiot.
Hey man, I'm on a diet.
Hey, he's got to hydrate. He's got to lose those 5 pounds.
Yeah, right.
I need that six beach bod.
James, you invited this particular guest, so you get to bring us in, and then we'll just do the conversation bit.
Yeah, well, we're going to record the intro ahead of time. This is always what's so awkward.
Well, we're going to record it after the fact. If we did it ahead of time, it would already be done.
Last time, so I can get into the right mind, the right headspace here.
What do you want?
We do the intro, so we can get
into okay.
I got to get into character.
Let me pull up the intro, then. Oh, my gosh. Do you see what I have to deal with, Mason?
I'm trying not to comment.
It's called working with a professional.
I don't want to get involved in y'all's internal affairs.
No, that's exactly why we invited you, actually, was to settle a few disagreements we've been having.
You need to be a mediator. Okay.
All right, you ready?
We're going to lead in. Whatever, just go ahead and start.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You don't need to explain yourself.
And that's enough of that.
All right, this week, folks, we have another guest. This is our third guest on the podcast. So, you know what they say, third time's a charm.
So, sorry, I mean, the other two were
sorry, Julia
trash.
And Jackson. Yeah. No, sorry, but you know, them's the rules. This week, Mason Pruitt will be our guest. Mason is a professional yo-yoer and former NCFCA-er. Did team policy. I don't know, what else did you do, Mason?
I competed in Lincoln Douglas primarily. That was my true passion, which happened. So, what? Can you hear me?
Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
How did that happen?
He's on the line. Mason, we can't hear you, man.
We were just...
Can you hear me?
It was going so well.
Can you hear me?
Mason?
Hello?
What's going on?
It was going so
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
What the heck?
I guess call him back. This is like...
Oh my god.
Video or something.
Jeez, oh my gosh.
Off to a perfect start.
We're going to have to leave all this in. This is gold.
This is...
Hello? We still can't hear you, bud.
Oh, did he answer?
Yeah, he's on the line right now. Presumably, he can hear us.
I guess. You may call him on my phone.
I don't know. Well, here, let's see if he can hear us. Mason, if you can hear us, text and or call James.
Yeah.
That's good. Then we'll know if the problem's on our end or his end. I think it's probably an issue with his permission.
He says, I can hear you.
Hey!
This is like... Poltergeist.
That means it's on you, Mason. You gotta figure this out, dude.
What? That's so weird. Good.
No, it's good.
Keep it going. We're gonna use it. This is great. Okay, so now I'm not in the right frame of mind again.
Are you saying we need to start all over?
No.
You're saying.
To answer your question, James, I am not a professional yo-yoer, but I do. So I did compete. What happened when I realized y'all couldn't hear me? I competed in team policy, and when we debated each other that year at Brenham, that was my first year ever doing well in speech and debate.
That's awesome.
That's until great. We steamrolled you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't really. I mean, I got second place speaker in the room, I think. I don't remember. And it was a really close round as in my from what I remember, but if my partner hadn't given 4 minute... constructive.
Oh, okay. So it's all Christopher's fault.
No.
Interesting.
Got it.
No, it's not.
It sounds
no,
like
I'm
someone's still a little bitter
no,
over
well
this,
that
James.
Round.
Yeah, I think someone's still bitter. It's like Julia's still bitter than I'd be.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But anyway, so I competed in team policy for that 1 year, and then I did Lincoln Douglas the next 2 years.
So the show, as you know, is we talk about things that have changed our lives or ideas that we find fascinating, have affected us in one way or another, generally is kind of the direction we go. Or if you go to the intro, we can play the intro here again if you want.
Why would we do that?
Because it has like the parameters of like what the show is.
Yeah, but it's already happened.
I mean, I heard it.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, what do you want to talk about, bro?
So the topic that I prepared to discuss with y'all was that of like memes and meme culture and how that has evolved over the last decade and how like integral it is in people's lives, particularly very close friends of mine and even my life. Like it's insane how people communicate with pictures and memes that they didn't even make, but they just send it to convey how they feel about something.
I saw something the other day that was like, it was like a string of three memes, and basically to understand what the post was saying, you had to have pop culture knowledge of like the past decade in order to understand it. And that is, you're right, it's super unique in that sense, that if you don't, if you haven't kept up with quote unquote, I don't know if you want to call it meme culture or pop culture, whatever you want to call it, you literally wouldn't understand it. So it's almost like, I don't know, a bad form of hieroglyphics, I guess.
Yeah, so that's something. So in like reading about it, it was something I was reading. A bunch of people equate memes to Egyptian hieroglyphics and cave paintings and everything like that, because the similarity between those two is like you're depicting not everyday life, because memes generally are so fantastical that they don't depict everyday life, but they equate it in the sense that they're both expressions of how people feel, and some people use memes to, you know, diffuse situations or calm themselves down or laugh about an issue that they feel uncomfortable about.
On the other side of the coin, maybe even use them to bring attention to something or use it to protest a certain issue or idea.
And so that's something that I have just been watching for the last decade. And as an avid user of memes, like I was looking at some before with my brothers and a friend of theirs, we were looking at some Avatar Airbender memes that have come out because they put Avatar The Last Airbender back on Netflix. And I don't know if y'all watched that show growing up. I don't know if you're a fan of the show, but it is the funniest show. So I haven't rewatched it since it came back. I'm not like that bandwagon-y, but I watched it growing up, and it was just like super fun to do at my grandparents' house, was just to watch that show with my grandpa. And so it was kind of funny because all of the memes that have been made that I see on like iFunny or Reddit or Instagram or whatever that are screen captures of the show that has been put back on Netflix, and people are taking those and making memes now, because making a meme about something that was popular wasn't a thing when the Avatar show was actually airing live. And that's something that I find so interesting, is when you reintroduce it into society, you get a whole different perspective than you did when people were actually avidly watching the show as it was being created. And it's hilarious because you kind of get a different perspective, something that I had never noticed, because there's so many like innuendos, not inappropriate, I say that word using it in
the, I feel like that word is very sexually charged, for better or for worse.
It is, but I can't think of, there's so many underlying themes that are comedic beyond, like, you know, something a child would understand. And that is something that is so fascinating to me, because I'm looking at all of these memes that people have pulled out, and it's hilarious. Because, so for, in one example is, one of the characters in the show has blue fire, like bends blue fire instead of red fire. And in the show, they say that's because an example of how powerful she is. And someone was pointing out that in reality, fire is blue because it burns salt and sodium. And they were just talking about how that, because of that, and the character's, you know, attitude and behavior in the show is like that. The reason that Azula's fire is blue is because she's a salty little bitch. Like, that's the reason, which is so hilarious when you've watched the show.
Well, like how we talked about not swearing, and now we're 5 minutes in.
I know, I use that one word. Mason, I use the one
can't
word.
Help himself. Right. That's what we're learning.
Yeah,
well,
we're trying to keep it clean over here.
I can.
This
I'm
is
not
a
gonna,
family
I'm
show.
Cursing.
No, that's super interesting. I actually had a question. I think Q was going to say something. I have a quite different question for you.
So before we get into the more personal side of it, because obviously for the nature of what we do, it's going to be more focused on how it's affected you personally and kind of your own experience. But before we dive into that, as the person who's brought us the topic, I wonder if you can give us some background on like the origin of meme culture and how we've seen it evolve, both from your personal experience. You know, you said you've been watching it for like the last 10 or so years, and maybe even a little bit of the historical aspect, if you happen to have access to that information.
Yeah, so actually it was something that when I decided this is what I wanted to talk about, I kind of researched it a little bit, because in my mind, I was thinking memes kind of came about with Vine and YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, all of that, which is technically not true. That's just when it became super popular and when everybody started finding out about it. Memes have been used and passed back and forth with like macro images with text on the top and bottom, you know, like the traditional memes format. That's been used as far back as the early 1990s, with people using, passing it back and forth using AOL and Usenet.com and stuff like that. And I was like, whoa, that blew my mind.
Yeah, I was curious on like what some of those would even be, or if I've even seen some of those, now that you mentioned that. Because I thought, like you were talking about earlier, kind of the inception of quote unquote meme culture, whatever you want to call it, was like 05, 06, somewhere in there. But what exactly, to you personally, what exactly qualifies as a meme? It could be different things.
In my mind, whenever I think of a meme, it's either like a GIF with a caption or an unstated relation to whatever it's talking about. Like it can be withdrawn from it. So like for a good example of this is like there was a TikTok trend of someone saying you've heard of it, so like basically it's like take a common phrase like you've heard of ants on a log, but have you heard of, and then they put like they position themselves in some position that's like a funny innuendo of words that rhyme with ants on a log or whatever it might be. And that to me is still a meme. Like TikToks and Vines are still memes. Images with captions are obviously like to me like the traditional sense of a meme.
So it's still evolving, you'd say. Like the definition is still evolving in current culture.
Yeah, I don't think it's set in concrete, and that's something that I appreciate about it. And
it's modular.
A friend of mine was it's completely modular. If you look at like the format of memes, like I have a friend who is a meme king. I mean, I try to show him a meme and he's like, oh, I saw that 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, I don't understand.
That's so frustrating.
I can't show him a meme that he hasn't already seen and laughed at. And I'm like, where are you getting your memes? Like, what is your supplier?
Right.
And it's like insane. And he was sending me a bunch recently, and I noticed that there are quite a few. It's like a new format of comparing memes from 2010 to memes now. And one of them is, you know, the girl staring at the webcam, kind of funky looking. And
the really attached girlfriend or whatever.
And then, so that's the meme from 2010. And then there's one from a meme from 2020, and it's a watermelon with a pistol next to it, and it says, "Don't make me commit a melony."
That just sounds like a bad dad joke.
Which is. I know, but at the same time, I'm looking at that, I'm like, that is, like, that's the evolution.
Do you think Gen Z is ruining memes? Because I've heard that perspective a lot, that, like...
I don't necessarily think... I was about to sneeze, sorry. I don't know. Oh. Excuse me. I'm sorry. And there's going to be... Oh, God, there's another one.
Get that man some Benadryl.
Anyway, so, like... Oh my gosh.
So you'd say no to the
I don't think so. Here's the thing is I think memes in general are so malleable and in a way can be so niche that no one group of people or no one demographic is gonna like quote unquote ruin it, because no matter what, memes are gonna continue to come out and people are still gonna be creative and find things that are humorous. I'm infinitely fascinated by it, because if you look at like the 2010 meme format of like the Dos Equis guy with his arm and he goes, I don't always quote unquote blah blah blah, but when I do, it's like that meme format that was super common, or from the Lord of the Rings, the guy who's just sitting there like,
one does not simply walk into Mordor.
Like that meme was manipulated and changed in so many ways, and people do that so often, and I think it's so creative that people are able to take something that someone else has done and just make a litany of even funnier, oftentimes, of iterations of it. So one example of that is the car salesman meme, which I don't know if y'all are familiar with it, and if not, I'll send it to you. But it's a car salesman standing next to a car, and he's patting it.
Oh, yeah. This says, baby can fit.
This
yeah.
bad boy can hold... Exactly. This bad boy can hold however many whatevers. And the iterations of that meme alone just make me laugh so much.
Right. I had a question, but did that answer what you were asking about, Q, before I move on?
Yeah, I think more or less. I'm sure we'll get to more of it as we go too. And I want to specifically filter it through kind of the personal impact. But before we get to that, I definitely want to know what you.
For sure, you kind of already answered this, but this is kind of something I thought that popped in my head earlier as you were kind of talking about like the kind of a. I don't know, I don't want to call it a generational disconnect, but like the way that I don't know people over 50 use memes versus the way that we use memes. We meaning millennials versus the way that like my youngest sister like Grace would use like or radically right. different. What do you think the impacts of that are practically in terms of our ability to communicate across generations? Do you think that's
I definitely view it as a hindrance. Like I'm not gonna stand here and defend memes because I know that they are harmful to people's communication skills overall. I'm not gonna say that, you know, memes are great all across the board. I enjoy them just as much and probably more than the average person, but I'm willing to recognize that it hurts people, and it hurts people's education in the realm of communicating with other people, in the same way that social media is doing the same thing and kind of creating a wedge between like the personal contact aspect of things. And so that's actually something that I'm going to go into when we open up the conversation to the, you know, the personal side of things. It's like,
yeah, that's perfect. I was about to say that that should transition really well. That wasn't even really my question, but I'm glad you took that angle, because that's actually more interesting than what I was asking. So that's great.
Something that I have just realized, you know, within myself is that instead of having, you know, real conversations with people, whereas I might, you know, have a text conversation with James, I send him a bunch of memes on Instagram and he likes them or sends me some back. So it's like I see it in my own life. Like I am beginning to drift apart from the people who I want to be close to. And it's not necessarily like a conscious choice. It's just the things that I find funny, I want to share. And then instead of actually having like a real conversation about like, you know, why I thought it was funny or why I wanted to share it, it's just like I sent it and then he liked it and then we move on. Or so I definitely think that on people who are much younger, that definitely causes some issues with conversing with people and having, you know, these kinds of real, involved, thought through conversations. And people are, you know, it's not like people don't know how to have conversation. But I think if people aren't willing to acknowledge the dangers of the things that we do now in society, that they're just going to go ignored and that the effects of them are going to be widespread. But if you can accept that memes are going to harm your communication skills, you can kind of guard against it while at the same time enjoying them for what they are, which is just a way to laugh.
So you think that...
Primarily.
Right. So you think the safeguard against that is just to be conscious of it and not just think, oh, you know, TikTok/memes/videos or whatever can replace meaningful conversation. And it might be like a conscious thought that you have in your head when you're doing it, but you're saying, I guess us and the and maybe the younger generation just needs to be aware that isn't a legitimate replacement for real human interaction.
Right, which I think a lot of people don't talk about. A lot of people act like their Instagram friends are real friends, but most of them probably haven't met in real life. And there's so many different things about talking to someone in person than, you know, over text.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that. I think the last, like, real conversation that we had, I guess, besides this one, was, like, when you and I hung out at regionals, which was, like, a year ago now, which is crazy.
No, you helped me move out of my apartment when I lived in Austin.
Okay, well, that was... Yeah, but that was, like, what? When was that? A couple of months after regionals?
That was last summer. That was June. So that was
still been
a year.
But yeah.
Regionals was before that.
Jeez, man. Yeah, wow. So it's still been a year.
It's still been a year that we've had, you know, a real, you know, hearing each other's voice conversation.
Yeah, no, I think I just noticed that. But so have you ever used that, like, social media or memes or whatever, as like a deflection or like a way to, like, I want to say like distance yourself, but have you ever used it consciously?
Like avoid having a conversation,
yeah,
with someone? Yeah,
have you ever consciously done that? Because I know I have, personally.
No, that's a difficult question, because I'm trying to think of what that looks like in practice. Like, if I have just either sent someone a meme in response to something they've asked me. I don't think I've done that. I have had people do that to me. Like, I'll be like, hey, do you want to hang out or something? And then instead of saying, yeah, absolutely, what time? They'll just send like a thumbs up emoticon right. Or send like a GIF with like the sounds great or something like that.
Sure. I was just going to say, yeah, that's I've experienced that same thing you're talking about, probably more so on Snapchat, where you'll send someone something, and this is always like, this really annoys me, and like I don't mean this, I'm not trying to single anybody out, but like I'll send something with even a question sometimes, and they'll just send it back with like a black screen and S, you know what I'm talking about? And it's like, okay, like we can still have a streak, but I was hoping for something a little bit more than a black screen, but that's a streak is now replaced a real conversation, no matter how brief. So I definitely relate to what you're saying.
So what I was just going to like to add on to that, that's something that I find really interesting, is like the Snapchat streak people. Like, that in and of itself is something that astounds me, that people are so involved in that, and that they attribute so much value to having a streak that's 1,000 days or whatever it is. But in reality, the point of having that streak mechanic was just an incentive to get people to use the app. But I always treated it as a, oh wow, you know, I've really been having like actual conversation with this person for so many days straight. Not that I have been purposefully farming streaks to increase my Snapchat score and simply by sending people streaks just for streaks. Like, that never makes sense to me. And that I feel like that's so... It's not genuine. And it's not real conversation. It's not real interaction. And I abhor it. Like, every time I get a streak Snapchat from someone, which I don't have Snapchat anymore, but every time I did get a streak Snapchat from someone, I just wouldn't ever reply. It was like, okay, well, you are not a person that I'm going to ever talk to because you're more concerned about having a number by my name than knowing who I am and what I'm about.
Yep. I 100% relate to that. I think you're right. I think that is definitely, in a lot of cases, replacing meaningful conversation. I don't think that was Snapchat's intention. I think, like you said, it was to get people to engage more, but not just to send black screens back and forth. You know, it was to get them to, like, actually engage and to talk. So, although, well, I guess Snapchat's origins are dubious at best anyway.
But yeah, that's true.
Quinn, you want to speak up here? You want to talk this episode?
I think I'm an audience member, man. Let me be the surrogate. No, I think the biggest question that I had in just in terms of how this has affected you directly. You talked a little bit about how, you know, these negative things that you're seeing affect others or something that has directly affected you as well. I wonder if you can get into that a little bit more. How have you seen memes, meme culture, like, what are the negative effects that have come for you as a result of your involvement in that culture?
I guess addiction, really. It's an addiction, man. But on, like, the personal aspect, sending memes back and forth have replaced meaningful conversation. And whereas I would have tried to hang out with someone in person or tried to meet up with someone, instead we just send memes back and forth and never actually get around to, like, hey, we want to see each other. How have you been? We want to catch up, blah, blah, blah. And it just never gets to that point because we're just sending memes back and forth. And it's literally that interaction has replaced an actual conversation that I think both parties probably want to happen, but we're just more concerned with getting a laugh out of the other person. Because I don't know if y'all have experienced it, but the disappointment when you show someone a meme and they're like, oh, I've already seen it, is heartbreaking. But it's interesting. Like, it's psychological. It's like there's some kind of reward, like a give and take. Sure. It's like, oh, this is a great meme. And then they start laughing at it and it's like an affirmation.
That's like, that'd be like the equivalent of doing a stand-up and you deliver your best joke and the audience just is completely quiet. Like, yeah, you're definitely right. There is some sort of, like, satisfaction from being able to make someone laugh.
It's a little dopamine hit. I mean, it goes to what you're talking about with the addiction side of it is, you know, you get a little, you see something funny, you get a little exhilaration, you show someone something and they think it's funny, it gives you a little dopamine. Like, there's definitely a chemical aspect there. I wonder, in terms of the effects that you've seen, for whether it's the addiction or the conversations that are being sacrificed on the altar of memes, what have you done, if anything? I mean, it's possible that you're still in the middle of it, to kind of combat that and seek out those real conversations that are being lost.
I think this is kind of a step for me in kind of talking about it. And coming away from this conversation, I'm going to contact some people and reach out to them and try and meet up with them and hang out in person, as opposed to just, you know, the traditional, I say traditional, it's not traditional at all. It's absolutely mind-boggling that we send memes and pictures that we think are funny back and forth to each other. And that's a conversation. Like, that's so absurd in the real world. Like, that's not how you communicate with someone. And I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, sending a meme to someone because you think it's funny. But when that becomes all you do with that person, it's a little strange.
Yeah, it's a whole different dynamic. And I have had that happen with a couple of friends. There's a name for it, too. I forget what it's called. I mean, it's not a meme related. There's a word for it. But
sorry to interrupt, but the word you are looking for is meme-lationship. According to Urban Dictionary, a meme-lationship is defined as when your only interaction with someone is sharing and tagging them in memes. What's up with you and Jessica? I see her on your page all the time. Oh, we're in a meme-lationship.
I wonder if enough of our listeners relate to this, if they were able to send someone on social media a actual conversation, like, hey, do you want to actually hang out, la la, and then give us your best reaction to what happens with that. If they're like, why are you asking me that? Or, like, I'm just kind of curious if enough people relate to this. If they send someone something, like, let's have a meaningful interaction, conversation, let's hang out, let's do whatever. Like, I wonder how the other person would react if that relationship has become solely sending me jokes. How does that work out? Back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even hearing how that goes for you, Mason, because it sounds like this is kind of taking the first step for you right now, just admitting that it is an issue, and then going from here out and, you know, reaching out to those people that you haven't been having those conversations with and seeing where that goes. I mean, it's kind of, it's perfect for what we talk about here, which is our own development. So the fact that it's in progress, I think, is perfect. And it's just about, you know, seeing how that goes and seeing how weaning yourself off of it, if you will, works, if at all.
And that's something that I've kind of put off because it is fun to send memes back and forth. It's enjoyable. But for example, when me, James and Tobias, we all met up, got coffee and walked around downtown and took a bunch of funny photos of me and James with my fanny pack and
I remember
pretended that it was a baby and that we were pregnant. I have really fond memories of us doing that in downtown Austin, just having fun and hanging out. And I would much rather do that than send memes back and forth to each other.
Right.
But it's so, like, it's almost like a internal laziness. Like, it's so much easier to just send memes back and forth and be like, yeah, me and James are good friends. We, you know, we talk, whatever. But in reality, James and I haven't had a real conversation in the last year. I think we did when you first went to the school. I don't even know where you were in school. I think it was North Carolina, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yep.
North Carolina?
Yeah, I remember it, yeah.
And the team, all I know is the college its mascot was a camel, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes, also correct.
I don't know what university you went to. And like, if I'm going to claim James as a good friend, I should know that, I would think.
Right. I'm surprised you even remember that it was in North. Most of my friends don't even know which Carolina it is, it's in. So you're already in the top 10% probably. But yeah, no, that is really interesting because like it kind of creates this illusion of connection that isn't really there.
And it offers instant gratification, right? Where like you might say that going out and, you know, spending a day on the town is more rewarding. It also takes work. It takes coordination. Yep. It takes everything. I think this is true really of every good thing ever, whether it's, you know, exercise or reading a book or like pursuing professional success. Those things are infinitely more gratifying than, you know, sitting on the couch and binge watching TV. But guess what? Sitting on the couch and binge watching TV is easy, it's accessible, and it offers me instant gratification, which is why I think a lot of people struggle with that. Also, I just want to note, I know Mason that you didn't hear anything just then, but for all of our listeners at home who can hear it, I told James not to bring the beverage. He insisted on it.
Hey,
and so that's why you're hearing ice moving around. And not only that, but he's now just poured water on his crotch.
I'm sitting in a puddle of water.
So it's a double failure. And I'd like to say that I warned you,
this is really
you fool.
But at least, you know what? At least, at least I'm hydrated. So
your crotch is
that's
hydrated.
A meme right there.
We'll be right back. Thank you for your patience.
What is interesting about this topic to me is the way that you've used it, and I know plenty of our peers have as well, used comedy as a coping mechanism or as a way to get through things. And the thing that I really liked that you brought to light was the double-edged nature of that. I mean, I definitely have experiences in my own life of using especially like comedy specials and whatnot as a way to kind of just escape for a little bit. And when that's over, I would always go back to the problem and figure it out. But there's definitely a tendency with a lot of people, whether it's comedy or really any other form of escapism, to dive into it headfirst with no desire to ever come out. And that leads to a lot of negative repercussions. And I think you highlighted that really well. But yeah, more than anything, I'm glad that you were able to kind of open up about that experience and being willing to talk about using it and, you know, getting through very difficult times with the help of something that I think a lot of people kind of just brush aside as silly or unimportant, but that's not true for everybody.
You're talking about not having a notable life experience. I'd say that definitely qualifies,
yeah,
what you're just talking about. And
qualifies for us, anyway.
I guess, yeah, I guess the take-home message is, like, take an inward look and, you know, because obviously you can use it in a healthy way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but
it's not inherently bad.
Be honest with yourself and know, is this for fun or am I using this to, like, to shield, to cope, to, you know, do whatever else.
Exactly.
So...
No.
Yeah, I think, and that's what I was really hinting at earlier, and I don't think I clearly explained that, but when I was saying that, you know, that memes can be a good thing for people, but they can also be a bad thing if people don't know about it. If people don't know that they're using it as a coping mechanism, it's only going to ingrain really bad habits of how they push aside whatever trauma or abuse or emotional issues that they have going on and just kind of, like I said, cover it up with something funny and something to laugh at and something to just ignore and, like you said, escape the issue, which is definitely what I've done and I know friends that have done.
Starts with being taking an inward look and being honest with yourself.
Absolutely.
Quentin, yeah. since you do crack, what do you think is more addicting, dopamine or cocaine?
You know, that's a really tough one. I think it really depends on the way that you're taking it in, personally.
Right.
A little bit of dopamine through the nose, nothing beats it.
Right.
You'd think it'd be the cocaine, but actually, it's cocaine, and honestly, in my experience, there's much better ways to take it.
Okay.
So that's my
personal take. You heard it here first, folks.
I advocate for taking drugs.
See, you shouldn't have said that, because all we're going to do is take out the knot.
Exactly.
And
then we'll pair it with when you told us to remove babies from a truck with a pitchfork.
Oh, God.
And then we'll turn it into an ad for your presidential run.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that sums us up nicely. I think that
absolutely.
That was a good winding road. I think it got right around to what we
I definitely don't want people to think I think that.
Well, it's not up to you now.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not that concerned with my public image or lack thereof.
Another good soundbite right there.
But, no, that's a good one too. Yeah, we got all kinds of gold in here. No, that's perfect. We really appreciate you coming
on, Mason,
and sharing everything.
And now, a special message from our guest.
Hi, guys. Listen, guys. As someone who's very close with the franchise fatigue people, I know they love removing babies from trucks with pitchforks, and quite frankly, I think it's abhorrible and they suck. Okay, that's quite frankly all I have to say about it.
This message was paid for by the committee to elect Mason Pruitt. And now, stay tuned for your double feature.
Boom.
This week we bring in our international correspondent, Joseph Sharp, fresh from Spain, freshly jet lagged. We wanted to get some insight into the international community here. It's interesting. I was looking at the insights for our podcast the other day, and I saw that we actually have a fair amount of listeners in Spain. So I asked Joseph, and I don't think it was all him, because we were averaging a bigger amount than I would have expected just randomly, because there's not necessarily a reason that people from Spain would have found it. It's not like we're targeting that audience or anything, but it's so cool to have them just the same. So want to welcome you, no matter who you are. We don't have really any insight into exactly where you are besides what smartphone you're on and that you're in Spain. So we're very excited.
I mean, that's all you really need to know, honestly.
It's true. We're very excited to have you. And if you are listening to this, we would love for you to reach out and get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Anyway, I was just kind of curious on Joseph, kind of what you've been up to these days. I know you had a pretty cool opportunity. I think you got kind of stranded over there for a little bit with everything that's going on right now. But
well, yeah, let's get a little background on Joseph, because most people aren't going to know who he is even. So like, give us the bumper book of Joseph. And you have like 30 seconds though. Don't it needs to be good
30
audio.
Seconds. Okay.
The cliff notes. Don't. Joseph.
Cliff notes of my life so far. Well, right now I'm a rising junior philosophy major at the University of Dallas. For the sophomore year, it's very common for the student body to study in Rome. They have a campus south of Rome. You study for a semester, either in the fall or in the spring, take a full 15 credits of classes, and you get to travel around Europe. So, oh, and also, it's around the same price as a regular semester. So, pretty sweet deal. So, I was planning on doing that, or I did do it on my spring semester earlier, starting in January of 2020. And yeah, it started off pretty normally. Got there, had about 100 other classmates. We were moseying around parts of Italy. I got to travel a little bit to Ireland, Portugal, living the life, you know? And then we had a meeting. Because we had like a weekly meeting, and they're like, oh, there's this thing called the coronavirus. Ah, don't worry about it. It's just a cold, you know. No worries, right? So we were all like, nah, whatever. I have papers to write and countries to visit, you know. Not going to give a second thought to a global pandemic, right? Yeah, and then a little bit later, they canceled the semester because they're like, yeah, Italy was one of the worst hit countries in the world, and we were right outside of Rome. I hopped on a plane and I flew to Spain because I wanted to do the Camino de Santiago de Compostela, which is like a pilgrimage. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm already in Europe. I'm going to do it. Yeah, then I got to Spain, and 4 days later, the country got shut down. So that kind of put a break on that plan. But then I got a really wonderful family to stay with in Spain, teaching the kids English, and I was there for about 3 months. So yeah, a little bit more than the Cliff Notes, but Phil Gien.
Yeah, what a journey, man. That's crazy.
I wonder if our listeners here, your host family that you stayed with, maybe.
That would be such a turn of events that they listen right to this show and they're like, ah, I know this guy.
Yeah, what a small world. Yeah, I actually did find the highlights here, or whatever, the insights, and it's 38 total listens from Spain. So anyway, ooh, pretty wow interesting. 38. They're actually our second country behind the US, so they're second most popular country. So
got a whole new market out there. Sheesh.
I know.
Yeah, come on.
International podcast. Internationally
claimed.
Hola,
amigos, amigas. Vamos a hablar en... All right. No,
I don't know what that means.
We're not doing that.
I'll have to Google Translate later.
Did Joseph say a bad word?
Do we have to censor this? So once you were kind of like quarantined, I guess, what? Because I mean, in Spain it got pretty bad, right? I mean, like, y'all weren't even able to go outside or anything, from what I understand.
Yeah, no, it was pretty intense for a hot minute there. I'll say I was very lucky in that the family I live with, a lot of kids, 7 kids from age 23 to 10, so we got quite the distribution. But they live in this pretty nice house, had a nice backyard, wasn't really big or anything, but you could walk around in it. So I was able to walk around the backyard, you know, peer longingly out the front gate, but nothing more than that for about a month, maybe a little more than a month, because yeah, it was pretty strict. If you're out and you weren't buying groceries by yourself, going to the doctors or going to an essential job, you can get a 2,000 euro fine. So yeah, not playing around.
For sure. So when you were in the house, kind of chilling, what were you mostly doing from day to day? What did a day in the life of quarantine Joseph look like?
You know, all those inspirational things where they're like, oh, you know, this is the time to get that perfect 6-pack baddie.
That's how John Mayer would say it, baddie. I'm really into him now. You better be okay with it.
Because, you know, you have so much time to yourself. Yeah, I kind of like approached it with that mentality for like, I don't know, 2 days. Then afterwards, that inspiration died extraordinarily quickly. I kind of surprised myself how quickly I lost motivation. So I ended up waking up around 9:30, you know. Just,
1 or 2.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if I get tired. No, I'd wake up around 9:30. Go upstairs, have some sweet bread for breakfast. I was finishing my semester online at the beginning, so I had classes. They weren't live, they were just recordings. But once I finished those classes, I played a lot of guitar. I talked a lot of Spanish, talked a lot of English even more, and played soccer with the kids, helped in the kitchen, little things like that. But I really was just trying to find something to do, if I'm being honest. I'd stand in the kitchen and wait for the mom to come by and be like, hola, puedo ayudar? Can I help, please?
Right.
Because I had nothing else to do. You want me to paint your front door? I did that 3 times. I painted your front door 3 times. Oh, yes. That's kind of the state that I was in by the end of it. I was like, you want me to paint your door 4 times? Like, give it a really nice gloss. Like, I had nothing to do.
That reminds me of in The Office when Andy gets fired.
Just wanted to come in here and literally beg you for something, anything. I will sweep the floors, water the plants,
no, you don't
clean the toilets.
I don't need anyone
pull
to
the
that
poop out of the
not
toilets.
Not even a thing.
Just please,
Andy,
please,
Andy,
give me something.
Well, the interesting thing is that, like, I think the interior part of it is pretty universal. You know, once you're to the point of being locked up inside, there's only so much cultural difference you can have. We're all just trying to kind of stay sane. But I am curious, Joseph, to contrast it more specifically, I guess, because now you're obviously in the States and you've had that experience too. What are the noticeable differences, if any, from experiencing kind of the quarantine culture, the reaction in these two kind of different locations?
One thing, I love that word, quarantine culture. I feel, oh man, I love that word. The contrasts. Oh, well, let me paint it to you this way. So I go from Coruña, which is in Galicia, the northwest part of Spain, to Madrid, take a big bus, and then I get on a plane to fly to Dallas, right? Along my entire travel there, I did not see a single person that did not have a mask on. Not a single person. So the bus driver, the person across from me on the bus, the person next to me, or not next to me, but on the row over from me in the airplane, every person that I saw, they either had their mask on or they were smoking, because they smoke a lot in Spain, and they had their mask in their hand. It was one or the other. I get back to the States. My dad and my brother pick me up. We go out to eat because my stomach is hungry for some weird reason. And I didn't see a single person with a mask on. This is Hillsborough, Texas, by the way. I just, the waiters, the waitresses, the people coming in, the people leaving, people that were notably older, notably younger, all of the above, no masks. So that was one thing that was just like, whoa, am I in a different country? Yes, I am. It was just way different experience. Second one is outside of just not seeing as many people wear the masks, I think in Spain, everyone has, or at least where I was, everyone kind of has a PTSD of like being together in public, probably because they're worried they're going to get the 2,000 euro fine. But like if there's like more than four people together, they're just kind of like, you know, looks like there's a drug deal going on, you know, eyes askance everywhere. Like, you know, is police going to show up? Somebody going to report us? What's going on here? Here in the States, we'll walk out of our front door and be like, hi, Jim, come over here, invite your family and your cousins. We're going to have a barbecue in my front yard. It's like, that's such a different approach to the ways in which they're enjoying their quarantine culture. So those are two little ideas that came to mind.
No, that's super interesting. Real quick, I want to circle back just to make sure that I heard something right. Did you say it was Winsboro, Texas, where you were?
Hillsborough.
Okay, never mind then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was driving down from Dallas.
It was only relevant if it was Winsboro because the podcast that we're currently feuding with, one of their hosts is from Winsboro, Texas. So I was about to have to disown it and make our stance brutally clear that we do not condone anything that comes from that area. And we might have had to kick you off the show, but, you know, saved by a slim margin there.
Well, Joseph doesn't like that podcast anyway.
Well, I mean, of course, yeah, right, Joseph?
Not a fan. Whoever you are, you know who you are.
You know what you did.
No, that's really interesting. I was having a conversation recently with a friend talking about the whole culture around masks, because especially in the United States, like it's bizarre to me how quickly it became a don't tread on me type of issue of like, these are my rights and you can't make, because it's such a minor inconvenience. I mean, I get that there are some people, a vast minority, mind you, but there are some people that, you know, I've talked to people that they say their asthma is triggered by it or something like that. And I get it. I respect that. But the vast majority of us, it's such a minor inconvenience. I really don't understand all the rage around it. And then, you know, and this was my impression of kind of the more global response to it. So it's interesting to see it kind of confirmed by your experience that, like, people are just saying, yeah, that obviously this is what we do. And, you know, any good that it can do is good. Why would you not? I struggle to really empathize with all the rage around it in the States.
Right. At worst, it's ineffective, but it's not harmful. And that's why I really don't get that school of thought. And the good old US of A will cough in your face and you will like it.
Oh, yeah. There is a fantastic video I need to I'll cut it in here, or I'll send it to James and he can cut it in. But it's an interview. It was at a COVID protest, and this guy he's out there going around to random people going,
everybody cough in my face, do it, somebody come cough in my face. Yes,
it's definitely real. I you know what's interesting is like the inverse relationship between the amount of cases and the amount that we care about it now. It's like,
yeah,
the fear gosh. Like no one cares anymore, but we're at like a record number of cases now.
Yeah, it's insane.
Really funny.
It's like America woke up one morning and was like, nah, I don't believe it in anymore.
Yeah, screw it. Yeah.
What was the – it was a Kumail Nanjiani tweet I saw the other day that described that pretty perfectly. It was – let's see if I have it. I do have it. He says, truly amazing that we stopped taking precautions against the virus because we, checks notes, got bored of it.
I mean, that really is it. That really is pretty much it.
And it's crazy because you're right that, like, with all the reopenings and everything, we are, like, we're seeing a resurgence. There's a distinct second wave that's happening. I don't know that I would be so keenly aware of it, except for that I manage the website for the city that I live in, and they have a page that updates all the COVID cases. So all of a sudden, at like a week or two after the reopening started, I started getting way more of those updates. And instead of being three or four at a time, it was 10, 20, 30 at a time. And we went from having like as little as 100 cases for the entire quarantine to, in the space of a couple weeks, jumping up well over 200.
Jeez.
And yikes. Just no one's talking about it anymore. Like, what happened?
Without getting into like the politics of it, it is just a really interesting trend. I'm curious, Joseph, like if you were able to, I don't know, who's the guy who wrote that Walden Pond or whatever? You know what I'm talking about? Do I just sound insane?
I have no idea.
I have no idea where you're going with this.
Okay, hold on. It's the guy who wrote that book where he like stayed out for like a year or whatever. I know I'm not imagining this. Who was that? It was an author. Thoreau? Were you able to pull a Thoreau at all in your quarantine and like get an inward look? Like, was it something that like you learned about yourself that was surprising, or some sort of like introspection, observation that you took away? Yeah, it was a real roundabout way, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a real roundabout way to get to the book Walden.
Right.
Okay.
Well, he was at Walden Pond, so it was connected. Yeah. It was just
it
just took a minute to get there. Yeah.
It's all good.
Let's see. What did I learn about myself? Yeah, I was a little surprised. I was a little convicted too, because I was living there. I wasn't paying for housing. I wasn't paying for food. I wasn't being paid otherwise, but those expenses were being covered. But I needed to tutor these kids in English. But I also felt like I needed to like work to prove myself that I was like worthwhile to be there for them to allow me to stay at their house. So I was always like helping and volunteering and just trying to like clean up in the kitchen, clean the table, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of struck me. I was like, well, when I'm back living with my parents for like a month or two, like, not that I'm unhelpful, but I don't really like rush to like clean the dishes, clean the table, do like all the little forgettable things around the house. So one thing I learned about is that I have a lot more potential to be helpful than I really exercise, which was kind of a weird thing to chew on. But yeah, that was one thing that I realized. The second one is that I really am pretty easygoing. Like, even with the lockdown, my temper didn't really rise too much. Like, it sucked. I was like, boo. But I wasn't like, I didn't feel any rage building up or anything. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Right. So it's more than can be said for a lot of people. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot of people who you would not expect it from too. And then they're really amped about the whole thing.
Right. Oh yeah. You can never tell what's going on underneath the surface sometimes. Sometimes it's a boiling steam pot right there and you just do not want to touch it, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate the candor in that first observation. I think that's something that all of us can probably, or at least I can relate to. I won't speak for Q, but I can definitely, especially because it's a weird dynamic too, like being home from school and like not having, I mean, you're not in your own place anymore. You're back at your parents' house or whatever. So it is kind of just, it's weird to go back there, and then it's like mowing the yard or whatever. It feels like such an inconvenience, but it's like, hey, you know, I'm staying here. I'm having to pay. It's the least I can do.
And I think also it's location. I don't know the neuroscience of this, so this is my completely non-PhD perspective on this, but I feel like location affects the way in which we like jump back into habits. Because like I was in a new location, had no like frame of reference for where I was living. While when I'm with my parents or living at home or something like that, you know, I've grown up there. I was there when I was younger, when I was going through my rough teenage years, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't know, I feel like there's so many thought patterns that are connected to that location that kind of get restarted once you're in that situation again. I don't know, a thought.
Your rough teenage years were like a year ago, though, I thought, so.
Hey, you know, I've grown up a lot, man. Lived in Europe by myself, pretty much. I've traveled the world. I've seen what it has to offer.
Kid, I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff.
Yeah, I've been around the block a couple of times. Those are great. I don't know. Do you have anything to add on, Q?
No, I mean, I think it's really interesting and really helpful to have that kind of self-awareness. I think that's what, to varying levels of success, or not even success, but varying emotional responses, I guess. Everyone has experienced this kind of inner reflection in a lot of ways. You know, where before we had the opportunity to distract ourselves with pretty much anything, now we're limited to what can be done inside, which, I mean, the internet's great and there's a lot of options there, but you're going to get tired of it eventually. And all that's left is yourself. And I think I've seen a lot of people, their response to that has been like depression, and which is sad, but true. But the opportunity that's there, regardless of your initial reaction, whether it's a kind of a pleasant opportunity to sit back and reflect, or, you know, you come to conclusions about yourself or realizations about yourself that aren't necessarily the happiest thing. I think it demonstrates the importance of living thoughtfully, and being just intentional about how you live. We've talked about it a little bit off the podcast, kind of on our social media, but like meditation has become really important for me over the last several years. And it's that idea, because I always like to be doing something. If I'm working on something where I can afford to fill the silence with, whether it's music or a podcast or whatever, then I 100% will. And I think a lot of people are that way. So taking the time, whether you're in quarantine or not, hopefully this is a habit that a lot of people can continue post forceful reflection, but just taking the time of intentional silence to go inward and like really think about where you are, who you are, and why you do the things you do is painful at times, but overall just incredibly beneficial. And I think too few people, especially in the States, really take advantage of it.
Definitely well taken. I enjoy when I have a chance to do that, but then I don't make the time to do it. So I do it a couple of times, and then I'm like, that was really cool. And then I don't do it again for months. So
like so many other good habits, right? Yeah, like there's so many of the best things in life. Yeah. You're like, you do it once or twice. You're like, that was amazing. And then you forget about it for years. And you're like, why did I never do that again? Is there anything that you want to bring up, Joseph, something that we wouldn't have thought to ask you that you think might be interesting?
Well, I was thinking about one last kind of Thoreau Walden pool reflection that kind of occurred to me when I was over in Spain. And that's just how fundamentally similar like we all are, whether you're living in, you know, South Uganda, North Finland, Southwest Spain, South Texas. Like there's some things which are just like universally experienced, like because the distribution of the siblings, there was like 23, 18, 16, 15, 14, 11, and 10, I believe. And so there's plenty of people in those teenage years. And something I realized is like anywhere you are, it's uncomfortable. It's awkward. Like you're autonomous, but you're not quite autonomous. You want to find out who you are, but you have restrictions on yourself. And on the flip side, something I hadn't thought a lot about is parents, for the most part, especially with the oldest children, they don't know what the heck they're doing. They're just going with their best bet of what's right and appropriate. And they're like really crossing their fingers, hoping the kid doesn't become a drug addict. Like you don't know what's going to happen. And so I was just really surprised by that, seeing like the parents work through having like four kids in their teenage years and just being like, wow, we're really similar. Like we all have the desire to be where we are not. And we all want what we can't have at that time. Like they love America and would love to travel to the most random places in the US, like Louisiana. They told me they love Louisiana for some reason. But I know people in the States who would love to travel to the most mundane, boring parts of Spain or anywhere in Europe.
Right.
It's the same thread of we just want what we don't have, and we're not satisfied with the smiles and the faces and the interactions and the conversations that we're having. Because like you said, Q, like we can't reflect and settle into the moment enough. We're always two steps ahead of our own body and we can never catch up. And I feel like with that issue, we're always crawling in our skin to be someplace where we're not. I feel like that's the issue. So that's my last reflection.
People pretend like that's a uniquely American problem too. But, you know, it is interesting that is universally experienced.
It's a human problem.
Right.
Yeah. I came to a kind of a similar experience, I guess, recently over a couple weeks ago. I did kind of a creative retreat through a film festival, because so many film festivals are closed down. They did an international film festival that was entirely free and all on YouTube, and you could donate to COVID relief and that kind of thing. But because it was an international film festival, the vast majority of films were in foreign languages from foreign cultures. And I've always really loved foreign films, but I've seen, I guess a good amount, but far fewer than I'd like. And this experience going through that with so many films stacked, I mean, they were full days of films. It was really hard to get most of them in. But the experience of being kind of immersed in those cultures through their art, through their film, more so than I ever had before, was very much that same kind of experience, and the same kind of ideas came to me of just the universality of so many of these issues. And even when the films would be kind of taking a specific cultural stance, or whether that's a critique or a celebration or whatever of a specific cultural moment that they're talking about, that is completely foreign to me. Because of the nature of art, they were able to kind of immerse me in that and help me to understand it in a way that I never had before. And there is 100% a universality to the human experience that is true at all times. But I think there's something about a global pandemic, something that we all have to deal with all around the world at the same time, that really hammers that home in whatever way it reaches you, whether it's, you know, being abroad or a film festival or any of the other thousands of ways I'm sure it can happen.
All right, what's your button?
Well, yeah. I kind of got to mine more or less, but the thing that I was thinking was, you know, we talked about what Joseph took away from quarantine, right, and what he's been learning, and so I wanted to make sure that we got the same thing for us. I think, like I said, doing that film festival and kind of taking that time as a creative retreat was really huge for me. And there's been, we talked about it on our, what was supposedly our only COVID related episode, we talked a little bit about the cynicism that it's not brought about, but really enhanced in me because of some of the just complete stupidity around a lot of it. And that's unfortunately only been enhanced with more recent events. But at the same time, like, it's forcing me to confront things in new ways and interesting ways. And I've done a lot of growing, I think, through this whole thing, both as a direct result of the quarantine and a result of the things that have happened during quarantine. And I think that's really interesting, and I wanted to get your perspective on that too, James. What have you been taking away or learning or changing, or how have you been changing through this whole experience?
I'm trying to think if there's anything separate from what we talked about in the last episode, apart from what we kind of got into there in terms of what I've learned. Yeah, I don't know that I really have anything to add to that, honestly. I think that pretty much covered it, what I was talking about there in terms of trying to maintain that, not like a Pollyanna rose-colored glasses type optimism, but just to keep looking for like the best in humanity and trying to focus on the positive. But that was kind of pre all the stuff that's happening now, which I don't want, again, I'm trying to be really, really careful we don't turn into a topical podcast here. Just continuing to look for the best despite current circumstances. We'll leave it at that. So, because it's easy for me to focus on the negative. I enjoy a lot of commentary where on YouTube or otherwise where it's just very, very cynical or very negative type commentary or things that are making fun of other things, like, you know, critique commentary type channels on YouTube. And you have a steady diet of that. It just kind of forces you to keep looking at the negative. What you internalize, that's kind of how you're going to view the world. That's going to change the way that you perceive things and events. So I've been trying to be a little more conscious of the type of media that and that's just very basic. I mean, that's something that you could talk about with anyone, and probably a lot of people would already have that opinion. But it's something that we kind of maybe give lip service to, but don't really incorporate it very strongly into our own lives in terms of what we're actually getting a steady diet of. And for me, that's just a lot of like really negative media. So it kind of, over the course of this whole event, I've been trying to kind of reverse that course and get more, try to focus more on the positive around me. This is very Tony Robbins self-help, but
see the good, be the good.
No, I love it. I think that's good, guys. Thanks for coming on, Joseph.
Yes,
we appreciate you. We'll have to have you back on. The idea of of getting this philosophy degree, that's super dope. I definitely want to hear more about that as you progress along, hopefully without much COVID hindrance here come next semester.
Oh, I am all ears to help out and talk more. Yes, yes.
Gracias, Joseph. Un gran agradecimiento a todos nuestros oyentes españoles. I'm afraid my Spanish is not very good. Allow me to translate. A big thank you to all of our Spanish listeners.
What do you got for wrap up, James? Let me know. What do we got?
Well, let's see. We want to give, first of all, a big thanks to, well, not only all of our listeners, but specifically in this episode, our Spanish listeners. I'm going to try to get this right. Hey. Gracias por unirte a nosotros, I think. Thanks for joining us. Again, as we said earlier, please feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to have a conversation with you. I think it's really cool that there's this, definitely, it's not an anomaly. The numbers here are definitely, sizable for us, sizable. So we'd love to hear from you. Love to talk to you. Yeah, I think that's all I had there. I don't think we pretty much hit everything else in the episode. I don't think I had anything else for wrap up.
Yeah, no, I think we covered most of it. Of course, as always, fuck you, franchise fatigue. Want to make sure we have that loud and clear. We hate you, and we'll never forgive you for what you did. I've been wanting James to kind of put to use my signature phrase, to put a button on these episodes. I want to do kind of like a call to action, like something that we can take away that's concrete that you and I can follow up on over the course of the month, and that maybe our listeners can follow up on too. So we had Mason talking about meme culture. We had Joseph talking about kind of quarantine. We're talking a lot about kind of broader international issues there a lot.
Yes.
How do you think those two things can kind of synthesize into a concrete call to action for this episode?
Well, I'm trying to think how you connect those, because I know that we obviously, communication is different across, you know, across borders, across countries. People think different things are funny, different memes are funny. We communicate in different ways. But in a lot of ways, we're really more similar than I think that we sometimes realize. So
yeah,
I guess in a sense, I don't know, start a conversation, reach out to someone who you might think is really different. It might turn out that you guys actually share a lot of the same, I don't know, senses of humor, beliefs, values, or opinions. And if not, then you can learn something from each other. So I don't know, something like
that. No,
something
I like that. It's funny that you went that direction, because that's exactly what I was thinking, because we had Mason talking about, you know, using memes instead of social interaction, and his current efforts to seek out real, meaningful conversation. And then we had Joseph talking about trying to be there for his family, or really wherever he is, be of service, be willing to help, and in the same way, like, bolster those relationships and pursue them in a meaningful way. I think that's really, really cool. And it's kind of neat. I mean, we didn't plan that, obviously. We didn't know much about what they were going to say when they came on, but I think that really comes together. I think the call to action that I would put as a result of that would be, reach out to someone. I think it has to be a call, or at least a real-time conversation. If you see them in real life, that's fine. But I want either a phone call, a Zoom meeting, Skype, in-person, whatever. Conversation of no less than, let's say, 15 minutes with a person you have not talked to in the last 6 months. You think that's fair?
I like it. That's great. I love it.
All right. So you're going to follow up on this, right?
Oh yeah. We'll come back. We'll hold each other accountable, but I guess we don't really have a mechanism in place to hold our listeners accountable, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an honor system, but I think it's a cool challenge. As someone who doesn't like doing that, it makes me uncomfortable. I'm the one who came up with it, and it makes me uncomfortable, but I think that's a good thing. And I'm kind of curious to see how it goes.
I agree. Let's do it.
Perfect. So that's our call to action for this episode. Thank you, as always, for listening. James, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at RealJamesKing. I think that's the only thing I'm on, actually, right now. You can also find the show.
Are you not on Snapchat anymore?
I'm not. I have someone keeping my streaks up, and I'm down to 3 streaks now, so they're not doing a very good job. If you're listening to this, you know who you are. No, it's okay. It's really fine. But speaking of meaningful conversation, I guess streaks wouldn't really qualify as that. But so, yeah, I'm on Instagram at RealJamesKing. Follow the show. We have a new TikTok. It's at James and Q. Pretty easy there. All one word. It's and is spelled out. They don't let us do symbols.
And at 000 podcast on all other social media. Go to quintinary.com to check out all the various projects I'm involved in. My social media is there as well. Feel free to check that out. Reach out. You know, you want to just have a conversation, especially during lockdown. I'm very available.
God made you special, and he loves you very much.
Bye.
It's time to talk about what we learned today.
And so what we have learned applies to our lives today. God has a lot to say in his work.
So we will be back next month with a new episode. I think the topic is yours, right, James?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
There will be a topic. We'll figure that out when we get to it. And in the meantime, good night, Peyton.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night, and God bless America.